All right, I think we did it. Ed, is that you? Hey, we're on the air. All right. In the Garden is, it's happening. We've got Master Gardener Ed Byarski coming to us live from the top of the panhandle.
Well, almost.
Almost.
Haynes and Skagway might argue with you on that one.
Well, fair enough. So, how's it going? It's a busy
pretty
time
good.
For the
pretty
garden,
good. We've
it?
Got a beautiful, beautiful blue sky with some white puffy clouds. Can't ask for much more than that, I guess.
Mm.
And you know, there's so much. Do we dare have the talk? I guess about all the sex that's happening in the garden.
Oh, the birds and the bees.
And then some. Yeah. Well, and we are participating in some of it, or we can if we want to. But there is a lot of it. And with all the stuff that's flowering, particularly, that's where, in some ways, for some plants, we, by making the right choices, we can help them out so we can hopefully have a bigger crop of fruit, or, well, I guess even applies to zucchinis. Zucchinis are still fruit, although we're probably classed, and tomatoes, legally, technically, may be called vegetables. But anyway, yes. There's a lot of it, and if we just start with trees and work our way down the way to start out with something like apples and cherries.
Yeah.
You know, I usually try to recommend to folks, if you want an apple, you need two different varieties of apple, not two trees of the same kind. It can be easier if you can find the trees that have multiple varieties grafted onto one. Then, of course, the bees don't have to go very far to do the pollination that they need to do, where otherwise maybe you can get away with only one tree in your yard if your neighbors have a different kind of a apple tree in theirs.
Interesting. So for apple fertilization to be optimal, you need, like, genetic diversity type stuff?
That's pretty close. Yep, that's a fairly close analysis. You know, the different varieties, it gets a little more technical than that for some weird varieties like Gravenstein, and there's a couple others that are triploid, so they need their own special weird pollination deal. But for most, and Yellow Transparent, one of the oldest varieties that we will see around Southeast Alaska, old Russian variety, is somewhat self-fertile. But strange things happen there, too. So they'll set some fruit, but they would set more if they're cross-pollinated with another one.
Hmm.
And part of that is, and this happened way back, and the story's been told before, when we lived in Petersburg, and we picked an apple over at Ted Smith's place. He was our neighbor down below us, out the highway. And my son took the apple to school with him for his kindergarten class. Everybody brought an apple. And I remember seeing that they had, like, shapes of apples hung up across the classroom. And after the teacher and helpers had sliced open the apple, the kids helped count the seeds in each apple. My son had the only apple with zero seeds in it. Where normally, you know, I suppose most other folks had store-bought apples, which were well-pollinated. But his was a yellow transparent, and it had no seeds. You end up with kind of weird-shaped apples because of that. The better the pollination, the better shape of the apple, the fruit, will be. Because seed developing helps the fruit develop also.
Wow. So a self-pollinated apple can potentially have fewer or no seeds and a weird shape?
Yes, exactly. And I've seen that since then, too. Particularly in yellow transparent, there's an old tree in a kind of an isolated location here in Juneau. And I've seen the same thing, too. And again, they have the odd shape and no seeds. So, bottom line, get a couple different varieties. Now, if you go to some others, not so with pie cherries, at least, they are normally self-fertile. The bees just move from one flower to another flower on the same tree. They're good to go. But then it gets more complicated with sweet cherries. Some are self-fertile, some are not. So they need some extra pollination. pie cherries can pollinate sweet cherries if they bloom at the same time. But sometimes, if you're lucky enough to be able to grow sweet cherries, very often they are earlier to bloom. So again, timing is important for when they bloom. And there's often charts in the better catalogs, like nursery catalogs, that will show you that they've got a big crosshatch chart based on early, mid, and late season blooming fruit trees, whether it be apples or cherries or it might be plums and other things that we can or cannot grow here, so to try to match up the right timing for the pollination for them to work. The other thing that's important for pollination, particularly for fruit trees in Southeast Alaska, is the weather. You know, it doesn't matter how nice the summer is, if during that 1 to 2 week time when the flowers are blooming and needing to be pollinated, it's cold and windy and wet and rainy, the bees and the flies and the other critters that might potentially pollinate just aren't moving around. So we may not have a good fruit set on those trees also. And then that's even more complicated by nutrients, how much nutrients. It takes a lot of food, plant food, to grow a good fruit crop. So if you get a really great crop 1 year, and because everything came together, the weather was good and you had nutrients good, grew lots of fruit potentially last year, you may not have very much fruit the following year because the tree needs time to store up more nutrients to be able to ripen that next crop. They may flower, but all the flowers fall off as the new fruits are trying to develop, and that's the tree itself is essentially sacrificing the flowers so that it doesn't hurt the tree.
Wow. That is really interesting.
So then we get into some of the other interesting plants and such that are out there. So let's go to squash. Squash is a good one. The thing with those are it's really easy to see where the squash has male and female flowers, but they're separate on the same plant. So there, and it's easy to see which one is which because you can see the little zucchini or other squash. The female flowers will have this little squash underneath its flower on the stem, and the male will not have that. And looking at the pollinating on the male will have bright yellow pollen on the stamens, and the female will have a kind of sticky, weird-looking stigmas that you can actually take the male flower from, you know, one male flower and bring it over and brush pollen onto the female flower to help the pollination. Very often we're doing this in a greenhouse. Maybe you've got a fairly tight greenhouse and there aren't that many flies and other insects and bees in there to pollinate. So your helping will increase the chances of you getting those fruit, those zucchinis or other kinds of squash. To set fruit rather than if they're not pollinated, they'll fall off.
Yeah, it's kind of handy that it's fairly self-explanatory or easy to figure out for maybe a first-time manual pollinator in the greenhouse there.
Yeah, squashes are one of the easiest things, really. Cucumbers are kind of the same way. They very often, most of them need cross-pollination, but there are, again, when you're reading in the seed catalogs, they may say that this particular variety or that one are called, the term is parthenocarpic. And what it means is that they are self-fertile, don't need another pollinator. So again, they too, that's a good thing, again, if they're greenhouse grown, because we may not have all the insects that are needed to do the pollination compared to outside in the field. And trying to grow cucumbers outdoors is a marginal occupation in Southeast Alaska.
Yeah, that's wishful thinking somewhat.
Yeah. Then we go to tomatoes. Now, tomatoes are interesting, too, because tomatoes are generally self-fertile. And all we need to do with those in the greenhouse, either if we've got a fan moving, to move the air around to shake the plants, which shakes the flowers, and that shakes the pollen from within one flower onto from the stamens to the pistil to set fruit. Or we can go out there commercially. They actually go along with a little something like a vibrating electric toothbrush or similar, and vibrate the plants or the wires or strings that maybe the tomatoes are hung or trellised with.
Gotcha. So that's a good point that you make there, that in a self-fertile plant, that is effectively saying that both parts of the operation are within each individual flower, so it doesn't really need the transportation of pollen from one flower to another. It's
yes,
just shakeable.
Exactly. So they call those perfect flowers, and then there are imperfect flowers, which are the ones that may need the cross-pollination, or they are literally separate flowers. Mm-hmm. There's some kind of weirdness in primroses like that. And they aren't quite male and female flowers. All of the flowers do have the male and female parts in them, but there's kind of a different form in that, in one, the female portion, in this case it's called a pin, sticks up high in the flower, and then the male portions, the stamens, are down low in the flower. And then there's the opposite of that. Stamens are high, pin is low. And then ideally you get better seed set. And for me that's important because I grow a lot of primroses from seed. So if the bees aren't doing the work, I may help them out to transplant. Or if I want to do some hybridizing, again, I can move pollen from this plant to that plant in the hopes of getting, well, hopefully the hybridizing process is to hopefully give some sort of improved variety. Mm-hmm. Again, whether that improved flowers, or sometimes that's exactly what has been done with, whether it be apples or cherries or peaches or pears or any other things, they're cross-pollinating to try to get some new variety in there. So again, humans are doing the artificial pollination in this case.
Right. Yeah, a little bit of sort of unnatural selection or something.
That's exactly what it is. And then we get something a little more complicated still, a little different form, in kiwis. So the hardy kiwis that we're growing come in a male and a female plant. The flowers are on separate plants. So again, we want to have at least one male plant with two or three females, so that in between them, so that then the bees and flies that do the pollination will move from one to the other. And I have had people come to me, said, well, one of my plants died, so I don't know if it's the male or the female, but I need another one. So for that, the flowers are just about to open. I was looking at mine this morning on the hardy kiwis. So again, if you look, and that might almost take a small magnifying glass, because they are rather smaller flowers. But again, there is on the female flowers, on the female vine, they will have this little tiny, looks like a little tiny white fruit underneath the stigmas. And on the male flowers, on that separate plant, you'll just have a cluster of yellow stamens with no little white fruit underneath it.
Mm-hmm.
They're somewhat helpful. The plants are somewhat helpful in that, at least with mature plants, they look different. The plant itself looks different, kind of like with birds, you know, a male mallard versus a female mallard. They're easy to tell apart.
Mm-hmm.
And with kiwis, the hardy kiwis that we're growing, most of us are growing in Southeast, the males have more colorful leaves. They'll actually have pink and white variegation on the green leaves, where the females normally don't have much of that. So, but again, it takes a while for that to develop into a more mature plant. The early young ones are pretty hard to tell. So you've got to wait for the flowers to open to see what you've got.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That is so interesting. And, I mean, off the top of your head, can you think of other plants that many of us are growing that are like that, where they're sort of separated sexes in the whole plant and not just per flower itself?
I didn't do the research this morning in my old plant taxonomy books from college, which is 40 some years ago, but there are others. And again, okay, I just saw a plant here at a lady's yard, which is pretty rare in Juneau, more common in Petersburg, Wrangell, Sitka, Ketchikan, and that's hollies. Hmm. So the true holly, if you want to have berries, you have to have a female plant. They have separate plants too, male and female plants. Mm-hmm. But you need to have a male plant somewhere in the neighborhood for the bees or the wind or however. I'm not sure how they are pollinated offhand. Some plants, trees, spruce trees, cottonwoods, willows, are wind pollinated.
Right.
You know, the wind just blows the pollen around. Alders are another good example of that. So to get, if you want holly berries, you've got to have two different plants planted somewhere nearby for that to happen.
Hmm. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's a good example. Huh.
Thing about just hybridizing, and, you know, it's interesting, too. We've talked kind of before about saving seeds and what you're going to get from the seeds that you save.
Mm-hmm.
So if you planted an apple seed, because they are already a complex hybrid, and then they were pollinated by a different variety, mm-hmm. the new tree that grows from the seeds that you took from that apple, maybe it came from your yellow transparent apple or a Honeycrisp or something like that, is not going to necessarily be the same, because just like with humans, you know, you may have, you know, mother and father, husband and wife, the same family, and their children all look different because we are all complex hybrids.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So our genes combine in different ways to show us different hair color, different eye color, body shape, tall, short, you know, wide, narrow, whatever it happens to be. And so things get very interesting. So again, if people are doing deliberate hybridizing, taking pollen from this plant and taking it over to that plant, mm-hmm. again, you don't necessarily know if you're going to get a good result or a bad result or a not useful result for the new plants that you're trying to get.
Right.
Hybridizing the apples, you know, at least if they're cross-pollinated, you're going to get a yellow transparent apple. You're going to get a Honeycrisp apple. But those from even two different fruits on the same tree aren't necessarily going to have the seeds, you know, the seeds that grow into the new tree mm-hmm. are not necessarily going to be the same, just like
gotcha.
Children in a family.
Right. So that next generation is when you'll see a whole new level of variation revealed.
Exactly, right, depending on how the genes combine. So, I mean, we're getting fairly deep into genetics here, but it's fascinating stuff.
It is.
And like I said, we can see it happening. Columbines are a really good example of that one, growing in our gardens.
Mm-hmm.
Columbines have lots of nectar. They are extremely attractive to insects, bees, butterflies, and other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And if we have different kinds of columbines, different colors of columbines in our yard or nearby, the bees and hummingbirds and such really like to visit them. So very often we will get from those seeds, and the seeds usually fall off on the ground. Often we aren't dead-hitting them, you know. So, and it seems like they almost all very often go back to the wild-type columbine, the ones that are, you know, yellow and orange or yellow and red.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting what happens, but on the other hand, sometimes you get something new and different and maybe better. So again, you have to select a plant and divide that plant if you like exactly that, if you want more of that kind, that color, flower, and such.
Right.
So then that's vegetative propagation, like with potatoes.
Right.
You know, we're cutting up our Yukon Gold potatoes to plant more of them, so with each eye we'll get more Yukon Gold potatoes.
Right, right.
Where if, like when Luther Burbank was hybridizing to try to find that the Burbank russet, you know, he was crossing flowers and then collecting the fruits on the potato plant and then planting the seeds out of those fruits to get something new and different.
Wow. Right. Ah, that's so interesting. My goodness. So if you, and it's like with apples, right, where if you want a consistent crop of the same kind, you have to splice from an already growing tree that bears fruit of the kind that you like. You really can't grow apples from seed for that reason.
Exactly. So that's why we are grafting.
Right, right.
We have rootstocks. Now, the rootstocks might be seedling apple trees. That part's fine. They'll be uniform. Or they may be vegetatively propagated to get a certain kind of dwarfing or disease resistance or some other characteristic. Mm-hmm. And then we take little cuttings from that apple tree, say the Honeycrisp apple or Golden Delicious, whatever it happens to be. So we take cuttings of those, graft them onto that rootstock, and then we will get more of our Honeycrisp or Golden Delicious or Yellow Transparent apple. Mm-hmm. So they're all going to be identical fruits because we've vegetatively propagated them.
Wow. That is so interesting. And so the same goes for a variety of flowers out there, columbines, for example.
Yes, or peonies, or primroses, mm-hmm. or any number of other things, you know, like our perennial flowers. Mm-hmm. With annuals are more difficult because they're the seed companies, the folks who are selling the annuals, whether that be pansies, or calendulas, or some lobelias. You know, they have to have either fields full of one variety, and so maybe they are self-fertile, you know, I'm not certain about which ones, or they have fields that are like different, like two different rows, you know, to get the deliberate hybridizing from, you know, they're combining a yellow and an orange variety of calendula, and hopefully they come out fairly consistent, the same when they're hybridized. So, right. And the same thing goes with corn, sweet corn, well, field corn too. Again, normally they'll have rows, and when they're most of that is hybridized, or they are hybridized, and they'll plant like five rows of one variety and one row of the hope for pollinator, and they literally will go out when the corn plants are growing. They will cut off the tassels on maybe the four rows that they want to be pollinated by the one row of, and they call these bull and cow rows. Mm. That's how they describe it in corn breeding.
Wow.
So you've got the pollen, so they leave the tassels, which produce the pollen, mm-hmm. and from that one row to pollinate the next four rows, that it goes onto the silks of the corn. And so then there may be hundreds of rows over, you know, however many hundreds of acres potentially. But it's like they're alternating one row and four rows to get the pollination that they want, to get the seeds that they want.
Wow. Boy, oh boy, that is really fascinating.
And then you can get a little more complicated by knowing that those varieties can be patented. So the seed company who is growing this particular variety, and they usually say it's a secret, you know, what's the combination, who are the parents of this kind of corn, whatever it happens to be, you know, they can patent that variety so that somebody else who might want to grow, if you're just a farmer or whatever, there still may be a royalty, and you may be paying so much per pound of seed to grow for the privilege of them allowing you to buy it. You know, so there's a premium price for this hybrid grown by this company, and I don't know what it is, if it's 17 years for the patent or whatever, how many years that they are allowed to be able to grow and patent that variety.
Jeez.
And then you're not supposed to be saving the seeds from those and replanting them, and you get in trouble. And there have been lots of court cases on this stuff.
My goodness, that's a bit of a racket. Wow.
Well, it is, but again, if they're making a superior variety of whatever that be, whether it be corn or tomatoes or something else, and this applies to some varieties of potatoes that I'm not supposed to, you know, I might buy these from a seed company, but I'll say right at the bottom, PVP, plant variety protected. Hmm. So I'm not supposed to take those my own, I'm not supposed to sell them. Hmm. I might be able to save my seed potatoes and then regrow them for myself. Mm-hmm. But I am not supposed to sell them to somebody else unless I pay the royalty to that company which developed it.
Wow.
Or
that's
somebody
really
who may have bought the rights to that variety.
Right. So it's like an intellectual property issue. When
pretty, very, very close to that, exactly.
Hmm. Wow. Well, that is a really interesting other aspect of it, you know. It just goes to show there's a whole lot going on in the world of plant fertility and fertilizing. And
oh, yeah, the birds and the bees are just a small part of it, but we've got to have them.
Right,
so
the birds,
so
the bees,
plants,
the lawyers, the grafters.
We won't get fruit. We won't get certain types of vegetables without that. And that is, of course, a big issue these days with especially for honeybee colony collapse and other issues, and what is causing that too, whether it be pesticides and herbicides and other stuff. So, it's really important stuff.
It is.
You know, we take all this for granted. We go down to the hardware store, buy some seeds, plant them, they grow, and they give us vegetables and fruits, and, you know, next year we do the same thing, hopefully, maybe.
Right. That's true. There's a lot that slips by one's attention, but it's a fascinating thing to talk about, and it always kind of brings it home to a theme that comes up a lot in our conversations about, you know, a lot of learning and planning goes into growing a nice, rich garden. You know, you really want to,
sure,
you have to kind of make a little bit of a study of the lives of all these little beings that you're putting in the soil, and they all kind of have some different needs,
yep,
and
right,
you kind of get to
so
know them.
So the more bees we see, and also whether we're planting some good crops that, you know, they may not be the crops that we're going to bear fruit, but I'm looking, sitting here in my truck, looking out at this crop of dandelions in front of me on the roadside, and those are really important for the bees because they're one of the first foods for the bumblebees coming out in the springtime. There's lots of them, and that's what they start to feed on, the pollen and nectar, so that then they can grow more little bees, which will be pollinating our crops later on in the summertime.
Yeah, wow, that's a good point. That kind of connects even more of the dots there, that it's not just the plants in your garden that affect this whole process of pollination, but a lot of the habitat for pollinators, whether that's intentional or unintentional habitat, is all still part of this picture of things fertilizing and fruiting in the way that we hope they will.
Yep.
Hmm. Well, maybe that's a good note to leave it on, I think, and we'll pick up this conversation again next week. How's that sound, Ed?
Okay, good enough.
Okay, well, you get out there and enjoy a little bit more of this sunshine, and we'll do the same. We've got a nice partly sunny day going on down here, and I'm sure there are people in their gardens all over town. So
yep, there's people waiting for me to help them plant some trees, so I'm going to be out of here.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for your time, Ed, and your expertise. And this was a fascinating conversation about the sex life of plants.
There's a lot going on in the garden, indeed. Okay, till next week.
Okay, sounds great, Ed. Thanks a lot.
Yep, bye.
Okay. That was In the Garden with Master Gardener Ed Bajarski. I'm so glad we got him on the line. That was a great conversation. And we want to thank the Flower Farm for helping underwrite In the Garden. And they've got vegetable starts ready to go out at the Flower Farm and at the Garden Center, along with herbs like sage and mint and basil. Lots of good stuff. And so the Flower Farm is at 6 Rory's Road, Papke's Landing. And they're open every day except Wednesday, 10 a.m. till 4 p.m. And then at their garden center downtown, that's right there behind Love and Matters, they're open Tuesday through Saturday, 10 till 5. So thank you to them. And coming up next, we've got High Country Music, hosted by the one and only Lars Christensen.
That's for sure, but it's nothing the homegrown tomato won't cure. Put them in a salad, put them in a stew. You can make your very own tomato juice. You can eat them with eggs, you can eat them with gravy. Eat them with beans, pinto or navy. Put them on a side, put them in the middle. Put a homegrown tomato on a hot cake griddle.
Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What will life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes.
Mm-hmm.
homegrown tomatoes in every yard you see. When I die, don't bury me in a box in a cemetery. Out in the garden, be much better, and I could be pushing up homegrown tomatoes.
Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What'll life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love. Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What'll life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes.
Hello, everybody. You're listening to KFSK 100.9 on the dial. My name is Lars. I'll be doing the show for you today. And let's get right into the weather and the birthdays for today. Today, mostly sunny, isolated rain showers, highs around 60, light winds. Tonight, mostly cloudy, lows in mid-40s, light winds. Friday, cloudy, highs in mid-50s, light winds. Friday night, numerous rain showers, lows in the mid-40s, light winds. Saturday, rain showers likely, high in the mid-50s, southeast winds 10 miles per hour. Saturday night, rain showers likely, lows in mid-40s. Sunday, chance of rain showers, highs around 60. Sunday night, chance of rain showers, low in the mid-40s. Monday through Tuesday night, mostly cloudy, highs around 60, lows in the mid-40s. Wednesday, chance of rain, highs around 60. And now for the birthdays for Thursday, May 31st. Chris Weiss, Donna Martinson, Justin Peedler, Tanya Somerville, Larry Hofstad, Mariah Cotton, Gerard Pop, and April Miller. Congratulations to everybody on this last day of May. Okay, I'm going to be playing country and western for you the rest of the show. And don't forget, we got the question of the week coming up here in about a half hour. You can win a $10 gift certificate from the Salty Pantry, where they make the food fresh every day, and it is so good. Well, let's get on with the music. Hopefully I got everything all set up right, and we can get playing.